Welcome to Straight Talk with MJ. I am your host, Michelle Jeanette. Thank you once again for joining me on another episode of this podcast. I can't believe I'm entering season 3 of this podcast. It just seemed like yesterday when I started it. I really appreciate those who have hung in, and especially this last year. I didn't put out as many. I had some issues with really bad issues with vertigo, so that kind of sidelined me and wasn't able to read as much and really get my thoughts together on some of these. So I'm going to be making up for lost time for certain, because there was a lot going on in 2021. But now we are in 2022. This is the fourth day of 2022. Wow. Time flies. So thank you again for joining me. The first couple episodes of this year, I am going to be talking about the children. You know, this is for the children. This is what we hear a lot about in mainstream media, how we're trying to, they're trying to save and help the children, and we've got to do all of this for future generations, as far as COVID goes, COVID-related shots, things like that. But what I'm going to bring to you is definitely, I see it a little differently. Yes, it is for the children and for the sake of the children that I bring my, not just my opinion, but data and the opinions of some highly knowledgeable experts in pediatrics and when it comes to knowing about children and children's health, children's psyche. And we're also going to be talking about not just that, health and psyche, but education. So education won't be on this episode, but I will be bringing you an interview with somebody local who's running for school board here in the near future, and we're going to be discussing his take on things and why he's running for school board and why you need to get involved this year. Okay, so that's what we're going to be headed towards, really getting involved. And again, my target audience has always been the Christians, the church, people in the church, people that profess to be Christians. And I would love for others to listen also. So I always bring in scripture, and my goal has always been to share the truth about American history. So I'm going to continue that. I always have had some sort of history information or stories in my podcast, and so I will continue doing that today also. And it's just going to be another kind of a foundational why we do what we do, reminder of not just why I do what I do, because I really believe that the founding of this country was divinely inspired, and we have strayed so far from the foundational principles of that. It's just, I don't know anything else except to give you that knowledge of, and I don't have all the knowledge, obviously, I'm not an expert at it, but I can bring you the experts. I can bring you the information. I can read you the stories so that you will maybe develop some sort of interest in learning about the history, because it is very interesting about the foundations of this country. So this episode, I've titled Do No Harm, and I got that obviously from the medical field, and that's the first thing in the medical practice is to do no harm, right? That's what they take an oath for, do no harm. Hippocratic Oath, you know, doctors, nurses, that kind of thing. But I was seeking and really feeling like, what is my scripture for this year? And I'm really going back to my core, a couple of core verses in Hosea and in Micah. And one of my core verses, just really that I love, and I have a sign in my house, in my kitchen, Micah 6:8. And it talks about, I'm going to read that out of the Founders Bible. Again, you'll hear me refer to that very often. It's so full of foundational principles and stories. It's fascinating. I highly recommend that you buy it from wallbuilders.com. And I did interview the president of that last year. Oh gosh, this is 2022. I did interview him in 2020, Tim Barton. Wow, time flies. All right, so Micah 6:8. A lot of people are probably know this verse, but I'm just going to read it again. He has told you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, to love kindness, or to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. What are we supposed to do? You're to love justice, to do it with mercy. You counter justice with mercy, to love mercy. So you love justice, or to do justice, and to love mercy, but you do it humbly. You walk with God humbly. And I've been reading a book I got for Christmas, We Will Not Be Silenced. Hold on. That author is Erwin Lutzer. We Will Not Be Silenced. And it's responding courageously to our culture's assault of Christianity. And on page, let's see, 257 in that book, I love this quote. It kind of goes along with Micah 6:8. It says, truth without humility is judgmentalism. Humility without truth is cowardice. And, of course, we know a lot of scriptures that talk about speaking the truth, but doing it in love. Otherwise, you're a loud gonging sound, right? If you don't do it in love and humility. But we are still to speak truth. That's, again, that's the part of the justice, you know, to do justice, to speak truth, but to love mercy. The other verse that really goes to this is Hosea 4:6. And that, it says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And I think that really applies to our constitutional republic. This constitutional republic, this people, this nation is destroyed, is being destroyed, because we have a lack of knowledge of what it was really founded on and what it's supposed to, designed to be. You know, how was it designed in the first place? We've come so far away from that. So we, you know, not just the church is destroyed from lack of knowledge, but my people, the nation, is destroyed for lack of knowledge of what it truly is. It's not a democracy. And I love this quote by John Adams, because we hear it a lot in the news. This is a danger to our democracy. This is such a danger. Our democracy is under attack. You know, that kind of thing. Even some, the people that I listen to in the conservative field, call it democracy. We do not live in a democracy. And I'll give you a quote from John Adams. He says, this is also from the Founders Bible. This is kind of interesting. He says, democracy will soon degenerate into an anarchy. Such an anarchy that every man will do what is right in his own eyes, and no man's life or property or reputation or liberty will be secure. And every one of these will soon mold itself into a system of subordination of all the moral virtues and intellectual abilities, all the powers of wealth, beauty, wit, and science to the wanton pleasures, the capricious will, and the execrable cruelty of one or a very few. That's democracy. It's at the will of the mob. All right? We live in a constitutional republic. Completely different. I've gone over that before. I've talked about this before. It's people should, you know, it's a representative republic. We give up a little bit of our freedoms in order to have somebody represent us to form a government. We agree, collectively agree, to vote somebody to go to government seat to represent us, and they're supposed to represent what we the people voted for, and that's how a constitutional republic works. No one person rules. President is not the ruler. He's not the king. The Congress is supposed to be the most accountable to the people because they're the closest, the House of Representatives. Because they are the closest to the people, they are reelected every 2 years. They don't do a good job. They don't do what they're supposed to. We're supposed to be able to vote them out and put somebody else in. It's never been designed to be a career. Congress and Senate, House of Representatives, it's a public service. It was never intentionally, the original intent was not for that to be a career or to get a lifelong pension because you served a certain amount of years, and certainly wasn't designed to have somebody like Nancy Pelosi and others, Mitch McConnell, okay, both sides, serving, quote unquote, for more than 30 years. And they're, you know, she's in her 80s. So it's gone a long ways from what it's supposed and designed to be. Anyways, I started off a little rattly, but this whole thing, do no harm. I bring this to you because I'm rooted in those two scriptures, Hosea 4:6 and Micah 6:8. I don't want us to have a lack of knowledge. I don't want us to be destroyed. So I'm going to bring you experts. I don't, you know, that I'm not expert in, but I will bring that to you. People that are being censored and removed who are high experts in their fields. Okay? Dr. Robert Malone, for instance, who has spent his life, many decades, working in the area of vaccines. He is definitely not a fringe quack by any means. Dr. Peter McCullough, who was the most published cardiologist, most published doctors anywhere. Hundreds of publications, peer-reviewed publications. These are the kind of people that the media, big tech, big pharma, and big government are silencing. We cannot survive when this happens. So that's what this year is going to be about, is speaking up, speaking out, bringing you truth again, once again. I dig for it. I do my best to find truth and bring that to you along with history. So there's the first 13 minutes of a rant. So the first thing I'm going to bring to you is, it's going to be, I'm going to put the links in this, and I highly recommend that you go in and listen to the full videos of these two clips that I'm going to share. It's fascinating, it's a little scary, and it's infuriating at the same time because of what's happening to our children. So the first one I'm going to do, it's a little technical because it's talking about data, but it's important data that you really need to hear because no one is telling you about it. If you're only on Facebook or Twitter, or you listen to CBS, NBC, MSNBC, I don't know, CNN especially, even sometimes Fox News, which, you know, I don't listen. I read their stuff, and I listen because I try to hear their side, but that's not, you know, that's definitely not where you're going to get your true information, knowing that they censor people. So the first video I wanted to share, it's from Pfizer's own data. So if this was, of course, Dr. Malone shared this data from Pfizer's trials, COVID vaccine, if you want to call them vaccine trials, from their own data. And it was just put together in a slideshow type PDF video. And he was removed permanently from Twitter for sharing this video. And it's from the Canadian COVID Care Alliance. But the information is still the same, no matter if it's America or Canada. It's still Pfizer information. So they have a whole 38-minute kind of video on this that goes over it. There's a lot of data to soak up. And I have to listen to this stuff over and over and over to really absorb it. So that's why I'm leaving you with the links. I highly recommend you listen to it and watch it. But this portion is talking specifically about children and what Pfizer did with the trials for children, and how these vaccine mandates coming out for children and being FDA approved, authorized, not approved, because the truth is there is not a shot that has been totally legally approved in America. They're still only authorized or emergency use authorized because Comirnaty is not available in America. So that's the difference right there. But the if you'll listen, the testing for Pfizer for kids was done in only like 1,000 or 1,200 kids. And then they said, okay, let's go for it. So listen carefully to this video clip. And then I'll move on to some pediatric doctors discussing some more things about the children.
Now let's talk about the 12 to 15 year old adolescent trial. For the adolescents, the inoculation is really all risk and no benefit. The trial was severely underpowered, as a study this small will not reliably show up risk for adverse events. There was an inoculated group of 1,005, and zero of them tested positive for COVID-19, and a placebo group of 978, and 18 of them tested positive for COVID-19. So Pfizer claimed these were great results. But since adolescents are at statistically zero risk of death from COVID-19 and very low risk of severe illness, in fact, the New York Times said in October of this year that for children without a serious medical condition, the danger of severe COVID is so low that it's difficult to quantify, the inoculation is of very little benefit to them, but it does present a very real risk of adverse events. However, the adolescent Pfizer study wasn't actually designed to find adverse events, because a serious adverse event, including death, that occurred even in 1 out of 800 kids might not even show up in a sample size of 1,005 people. But in this case, the danger signal did come through. Among the inoculated adolescents, there was at least one serious adverse event, and her name was Maddie DeGarry. Maddie DeGarry is a 12-year-old trial participant who developed a serious reaction after her second dose of the inoculation and was hospitalized within 24 hours. She developed gastroparesis, nausea, vomiting, erratic blood pressure, memory loss, brain fog, headaches, dizziness, fainting, seizures, verbal and motor tics, menstrual cycle issues, lost feeling from the waist down, lost bowel and bladder control, and she had to have a feeding tube because she lost her ability to eat. She's been hospitalized many times since then, and for the past 10 months, she's been wheelchair bound and fed via tube. In their report to the FDA, Pfizer described her injuries as functional abdominal pain, and there's a link to the FDA report below. This is unconscionable, and certainly opens up the possibility that other adverse events have been suppressed or misrepresented. In terms of 5 to 11-year-olds, the inoculation is an unacceptable risk to their health. In this table, Pfizer, using predictive modeling, acknowledges that the inoculations will cause myocarditis in children, see the columns in red, but they optimistically claim that there will be zero deaths from this myocarditis, see the column in yellow. It's speculation on their part. The low-level evidence of a predictive model. But let's just say it's true, and there will be no deaths. There's still no justification for giving children myocarditis. First, do no harm should apply here, but the government has now normalized the expectation of heart problems from these inoculations among children to the point that Sick Kids is actually putting out brochures on how to deal with them. The way to deal with them is don't give them products that will harm their hearts, because myocarditis is actually very serious. It's damage to the heart and it's not reversible. Myocarditis is an inflammatory process of the myocardium, which is the heart muscle. Severe myocarditis weakens your heart so that the rest of your body doesn't get enough blood. Blood clots can form in your heart, leading to a stroke or a heart attack. And the mortality rate is up to 20% at 6.5 years. So while Pfizer may be correct in that their inoculations might not cause any immediate deaths, we maintain that a 1 in 5 chance of dying in 6.5 years is unequivocally an unacceptable risk for children. But the FDA says it is an acceptable risk for children. They have actually abandoned the first do no harm principle. Remember, medical interventions are supposed to be proven safe before they're rolled out in the population. Yet Dr. Eric Rubin, one of the 18 members of the FDA advisory panel who voted to approve the inoculations for children from 5 to 11, actually said the opposite and suggested that a population-level rollout was an appropriate way to test for adverse events.
But we're never going to learn about how safe the vaccine is unless we start giving it. That's just the way it goes. That's how we found out about rare complications of other vaccines, like the rotavirus vaccine. And I do think we should vote to approve it.
It's worth noting here that Dr. Eric Rubin is the editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the publisher of the Pfizer trial reports. Direct-to-consumer advertising of prescription drugs is actually illegal in Canada.
Okay, sorry, I played a little long there. So, did you catch what he said? We're just going to have to give the shot to find out what really the results will be. Kind of like we have to read what's in this bill, pass the bill, and then before we can read what's in it. Except this is a lot more dangerous. This next video is very eye-opening. Two different doctors are going to speak in this video with Dr. Robert Malone. And again, I highly recommend that you watch this in its entirety. Especially if you're a parent or you work with children, even if you work with them in the schools or as a youth leader or something like that, because they're talking about the psychology of what's happened over the last 2 years and how it's affected the children. So we're listening to a pediatric cardiologist and a child psychiatrist on these two clips, and you will find it pretty fascinating, and probably, I don't know, it pretty much broke my heart and made me mad about how our children are, how this is affecting our kids, or how the government response to everything is seriously damaging our children. All right, so listen to this clip.
What about vaccine mandates, Kirk? What do you think about that for children?
Well, you know, we don't have really, how could you mandate something, especially in young children, that we really have only studied at best for less than a year, especially in children? I mean, when Pfizer comes out itself and says, we actually didn't power our studies enough to look at myocarditis, that should be telling to everyone. I know some of these are theoretical risks, but why are we mandating something on the least risky population in our society? It doesn't make public health sense to me at all. The only way you can make sense out of this is they want a single cookie cutter way of handling this pandemic. We don't handle infectious diseases like that in pediatrics. For RSV, we treat that differently depending on how many comorbidities you have. If you have significant heart disease, we treat you, prepare you for RSV season. Why aren't we looking at COVID the same way and say, who are those people who are most susceptible to severe disease and treat them appropriately? And those who are not susceptible, treat them appropriately as well. The mandates don't make sense to me from a scientific point of view.
So, Kirk, you're probably the most qualified physician scientist I've encountered for talking about pediatric damage to the heart. associated with both the virus and the vaccine. Are, in your opinion, if we have the mandates deployed in the state of California that Governor Newsom has signed into law, are we going to see significant numbers of death in damaged hearts in California from the vaccines?
I think depending on how many people they get to take it, I think the number is just a numbers game. I think as you look around the world, we're getting down to a number of somewhere between 1 in 3,000, 1 in 6,000. If we allow those kids to stay active and play, I think there's a lot of myocarditis that is under the radar. A recent study on elite athletes out of the Big Ten showed that when they looked at the cardiac MRI of the elite athletes, almost 50% had, or around 50% had myocarditis that wasn't known by symptoms, but was seen on cardiac MRI, and that puts them at risk for sudden death. So I think that as we ramp this up for really to try to get everyone, like the mandate in California, to get you have to have a vaccine in order to go to school, then I think by what we see around the world, then the numbers of myocarditis cases will go up, and we may have an increase in sudden cardiac death associated with myocarditis just as kids playing on the field.
So thanks a lot. We'll come back to this. But first, Dr. Mark McDonald. Mark, please introduce yourself and give us a little bit of bio. But as a bit of background, I had the pleasure of spending some time with Mark at an open discussion panel, and he opened my eyes completely to what's going on in the pediatric, psychiatric, and psychological effects of the mismanagement of this whole outbreak. Not just the mandates, the masking, the lockdowns, the school disruptions. I really look forward to what Mark has to share with us about what he's seeing clinically.
Thank you, Rob. I do run a child and adolescent psychiatric private practice in West Los Angeles, and I have been for over 10 years now. And I can say unequivocally that the government response to this pandemic, and I emphasize government response, not the pandemic itself, has been utterly devastating to the mental health of my patients. I have never witnessed as acute of an increase in anxiety, depression, and other self-harming behaviors as I have in my pediatric population in the last 2 years. I lost my first patient in my career to unnatural causes last March. It was a 15-year-old boy who was kept home from school, and he ordered fentanyl on Snapchat to be delivered to his house, thinking that it was Xanax. He died within 8 minutes of respiratory compromise and cardiac arrest. His father found him lying face down in a pool of his own vomit, trying to serve him a hamburger that he had been making for his son during the lunch hour at home. I have never been through this level of disruption of mental and emotional stability of my patients in my career. Bedwetting, drug use, violence, incarceration, inpatient hospitalizations, intranicene warfare within the family. It is an absolute disaster, and it is all due to three things. It is due to closure of schools, it is due to mask mandates, and now more recently to mandatory vaccines. There was a study that was published just this past week at a Brown University. It covered over 1,000 children aged 0 to 5 on a follow-up of a study published the previous month on IQ point loss in infants that were born after January 2020. A 20-point IQ point loss, 20 points for children born during the pandemic compared to those before. Devastating. Well, this larger study that was published a couple of days ago found not only an IQ point loss, but in 0 to 5 year old children, a 24% overall cognitive decline in objective test measures, such as intelligence testing, executive function testing, memory, et cetera, in those group of children compared to 2017, 18, 19. That's in 18 months, we've seen a 24% decline, not arrest, not freeze, but actual decline in cognitive development in children. We are literally causing brain damage to our children by keeping them from school, by forcing them to wear masks, by isolating them, by depriving them of the normal and necessary integrative social, psychological, and emotional connections with other people and with their environment. I have several patients who over the past summer were coerced into receiving vaccines at the junior high school and high school level in order to work, in order to go to camps, in order to go to play groups. Some of these were mandates from schools, some were mandates from employers, and some were mandates from parents. Children, especially adolescents, are the single greatest peer-influenced group that we have in the United States. They will listen to their peers more than they will listen to their parents. So if their peers are telling them, we won't play with you, we won't go to Disneyland with you, we won't allow you to go to our bat mitzvah or our bar mitzvah, unless you get a vaccine, they will do it, even if they are opposed to it. So the patients that I've had of all ages who have experienced this tremendous anxiety, this tremendous pressure, this tremendous compulsion to go against basic, straightforward, unequivocal medical advice, that is that they do not need to receive these shots, are going in and doing them anyway. And they're doing it in order to stay alive, active, and connected with their peer group, to go to work, and to go to school. This is not only medically, ethically, and morally wrong, it is also incredibly damaging to their psyche, it's damaging to their emotional stability, it's causing them to have second thoughts about their own ability to resist pressure, to trust their parents, to trust the schools, to trust the government. It is now the culmination of an effort for the last 18 months, in my opinion, to transfer the anxiety and fear of adults onto the children. That is irresponsible, that is abusive, that is essentially child abuse in my view. And I witness it with my very eyes every single day when I see patients, young patients coming to my practice who do not know what to do next.
Wow. I highly recommend listening to this entire video in its entirety. They go through a lot more information about the children. And it's just, it's kind of heartbreaking. And I would add to this also, because our pastor talks about it a lot, is the spiritual rhythm. We have so many, because churches closed in 2020, many of them did not open back up in 2021. People got out of spiritual rhythm. All of this snowball that he's talking about, the mental, the emotional trauma of these kids in lockdowns and forcing to be wear a mask as young kids are, you know, and now the psychology of forcing vaccines in certain places, right now in California, New York, it'll, you know, it's spread. I love that we don't have that here in our state, but we have to be vigilant to not let it happen here. Okay, we have to be proactive, not reactive in that area. If you live in a state that is still like we call the free state, free America right now, which is, it's awful that we have to describe different states that way. We should all be living in free America. So yeah, that is, if you are interested in children, if you have children, if you work with children, we may not even understand all the effects on our children. It may not show up for years, on as far as the emotional and mental toll and the spiritual toll. But the effects physically are already showing up, and it's do no harm, and we're not following that rule at all. So, I'll end this one. I'm already at, let's see, what minute am I at here? Ooh, 33 minutes, 34 minutes. So I'll end it with a story, a little bit of a story from the Founders Bible. And it's called Birthplace of American Independence. And we have to get back to our roots, what we were established and how we were established, okay? The basis on which we were established and why, kind of. So if we can understand that, we can come from that foundation and be able to rebuild up what we should be, okay? America has always, you know, she's gone through a lot. She's made mistakes. We've made mistakes as a people, as a government, obviously, in our past. But we've always grown and gotten better and become better. That's what I believe. Until just the last, I think it started kind of going backwards in the 2009 through probably the 2012. 2009 to 2012, 2015, something like that. Those years were a turnaround. People started to see each other, what you call tribalism. So we have to get back to this unified roots, the unified roots of our history. And what better way to do it than to understand it and to be knowledgeable and learn about it. So this is about Pastor John Wise and the Womb of Liberty. Perhaps you've read or heard that the main premises of the Declaration of Independence, such as all men are created equal, were derived from the Enlightenment or the Age of Reason and have no biblical origin. Since the phrases used are not familiar to us today, the fallacy of equivocation, or changing the meaning of words and phrases by taking them out of their historic context, has been all too successful. But if we study the origin and meaning of the famous phrases in the Declaration, we discover otherwise. When President Calvin Coolidge gave a speech in 1926 on the 150th anniversary of the Declaration, he attributed the meaning of its key phrases to two books published in 1710 and 1717 by John Wise, the Congregational pastor of Ipswich, Massachusetts. Coolidge called these books a textbook of liberty for our Revolutionary Fathers. Was he right? In a letter to Timothy Pickering in 1822, Founder John Adams wrote, quote, "As you justly observe, there is not an idea in it or in the Declaration, but what had been hackneyed in Congress for 2 years before. The substance of it is contained in the Declaration of Rights and the violation of those rights in the journals of Congress in 1774. Indeed, the essence of it is contained in a pamphlet voted and printed by the town of Boston before the first Congress met." End quote. The pamphlet that Adams was referring to that contained the essence of the Declaration's ideas was Pastor Wise's Vindication of the Government of New England Churches. If the main ideas in the Declaration could be traced to a book on church government first published by a pastor in 1717, they couldn't be Enlightenment ideas or have been, quote, invented by Thomas Jefferson in 1776. Wise's ideas included the laws of nature and of nature's God, all men are created equal, governments secure rights but don't provide them, and they derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. Could it be that the Declaration's ideas came from the colonial pulpit and thus from the Bible? Amazingly, Wise's book was republished by a unanimous vote of the town of Boston in 1772 in order to inspire the other colonies to unite behind the cause of the Revolution. It is important to understand that civil freedom, or our independence, was birthed in the church. Religious liberty begets civil liberty. This is the lesson of our heritage and should inspire us to be salt and light in our communities, living out our faith so that those who behold our good works may glorify our Father who is in heaven. And that's from Matthew 5:16. It has been well documented that the real inspiration for the American Revolution was the Black Robe Regiment, the colonial clergy, who preached fiery biblical sermons on the just cause of war and why our rights come from God and not from government. Written 60 years before the Declaration, John Wise's books are considered among the finest colonial expositions of democratic principles. He wrote that God is the author of both reason and revelation, or the light of nature and the law of God. Both the Bible, his inspired revelation, and a man's conscience, natural revelation, convict man of sin. Thus, the phrase law of nature and of nature's God, or the law of God seen in nature and the law of God in the Bible, leave every person without excuse. That is why the truths are self-evident. Wise also wrote that God created all men equally free as well. This was not external equality, but equal position before God and the law. Equality was clearly articulated to mean equal rights, not equal possessions or abilities. Wise wrote that the individual is directly under the government of God, and thus church and civil government can only secure or protect these rights. They cannot provide them. The primary form of government for both church and state is self-government because, as Wise put it, each individual is a free-born subject. Though Wise was writing to preserve religious liberty, he made it clear that democracy is Christ's government in church and state. Though no church or state should function as a pure democracy, the self-government of the individual is the heart of Christ's government. Finally, Wise also articulated that government is by free compact or covenant. Only by the voluntary consent of individuals can a government have authority, since it must be delegated from the individual who in Christ operates as a king and priest before God. Thus, both ecclesiastical and civil government must function by the consent of the governed. So who was John Wise of Ipswich? He was a congregational pastor who led fellow townsmen in 1687 in a revolt against a tax levied by the royal governor Andros without the consent of a legislative body. The Anglican church hierarchy was forcing a tax upon New England's colonial churches, and they refused to be subject to such autocratic despotism. Although he was imprisoned for it, he was successful in lawfully inspiring a, quote, citizen's arrest of Andros and having him shipped back to England in chains. This was New England's first Independence Day. That is why, on the seal of the town of Ipswich, it states, quote, the birthplace of American independence, 1687, end quote. Historian Henry Martin Dexter, writing in 1880, said of Pastor Wise, he did not himself see, nor did his generation comprehend, either the exact bearing or the entire force of the principles which he enunciated. Having withstood the test of time, the glorious ideas captured in the Declaration and the Constitution were not newly conceived by the brilliance of Thomas Jefferson or the framers. These ideas were birthed in the womb of the churches of New England as the pastors and people searched the scriptures in the previous generations, then were proclaimed from church pulpits and later penned into our great founding documents. If we do not understand the source and origin of our God-given rights, we will be unable to preserve them. If we cannot maintain religious liberty, we will not secure civil liberty. May God help us to restore these biblical ideas within the church so they might be preserved in society. So that's the basis, that's the foundation we have to get back to. And studying the Constitution, which is not a very long document, but it is the supreme law of this land. Not the courts, not what the courts say, not necessarily just what Congress says, but the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, is the supreme law of the land. And if we are to continue being a free country, which right now is under serious attack, We have to go back to that foundation of studying the Constitution and what our constitutional republic was meant to be. So that's what I hope to bring to you as far as information goes. And just tidbits of info so that we can be active in our own communities. So take this information, share it with people. It's not fringe ideas. It's not misinformation. It's not disinformation. I think it's you really have to listen to that and get the Holy Spirit to give you discernment. And the people that don't follow Jesus and don't have a belief in Jesus or a Holy Spirit conviction, they will be even more deceived. But it's disheartening to see so many others not listening to truth. And my goal is truth in love and humility. I'm just bringing that to you, and that's my whole, my whole attitude. Hopefully it comes across that way. So thank you again. I hope this year will be enlightening. It's going to be another interesting year, but we have a lot to fight for. We have a lot to fight for. This nation is worth fighting for. The ideas that this nation was founded on are worth fighting for. And the last quote I'll leave with you is from founder John Adams. And he's talking about the cost of liberty. And he says this quote. It says, "Securing independence truly was costly for the signers, all of them." And here's John Adams' quote. "Posterity," he's talking to us, those that come after him, "you will never know how much it costs the present generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you will make a good use of it. If you do not, I shall repent it in heaven that I ever took half the pains to preserve it." Don't let our kids say that of us. Don't let us have to say that, okay, to our kids. What are our grandparents saying about us now? I know my grandfather would be, both of them would be appalled at what's happening in this nation. So we have to come together and we have to get to the root, back to our foundations. And I hope you'll continue on the journey with me in doing that. And thank you again for listening. And we will talk again. Again, you can follow me at straighttalkwithmj.net. I was off Facebook. I'm back on just a little bit, but you can really find me on Getter, and that's Gettr. It's an app. It is what's really coming across and taking over Twitter, which is censoring everyone now. Anything that goes against the government, big pharma, big tech, and big government, they're shutting you down. Christians, everything. So get in the fight, but go over where free speech is, Getter. And in Getter, I am at Straight Talk WMJ with MJ. I couldn't spell the whole thing out. It was too long. Straight Talk WMJ. That's where you can find me on Getter. I'll put the link on there on the podcast. So anyway, thanks again for listening, and I hope you'll follow me this year. Talk to you again soon. God bless.